This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Here we are, Lindsay Clancy. We're getting very close to closing arguments. And Wednesdays, as we always do, we are going to break into the psychological end of this case. Lindsay Clancy, of course, paralyzed from the chest down, has been under round-the-clock suicide watch since January 23. If the jury convicts, the most likely destination is MCI Farmingham, the oldest women's prison in the country, operating since 1877. Psychotherapist Siobhan Scott is with us to help us break all this down. What happens if she goes to prison? What happens if she stays in a mental health facility like Tewksbury? Where does this all go? We're going to talk about Patrick as well today. But let's start here. For 3.5 years, Lindsay Clancy has been a patient. Everyone around her, nurses, doctors, aides, exist to help her. The system has currently said, yeah, she doesn't belong in the county jail. She belongs in a mental health facility. A guilty verdict makes her an inmate, and everyone around her exists to contain her. Like I said, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author with myself and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program. I guess I want to start here. Why is it, Siobhan? I know this is probably a function of how our system currently works, but you have a system that currently has said this woman does not belong in a jail. She belongs in a mental health facility, and she's been there ever since, still is to this day. Why is it that what could happen next is a decision that is very much about mental health, it's very much about where she goes from here, that could remove her from a hospital-like setting where she is contained securely, to something that is not that. And it's a decision about mental health that will be made by people who are not practicing in the world of mental health, just regular folks out on the road, jurors, making the decision about something so critically important that are not educated on it. That to me, it just seems bizarre. It seems strange, but I know this is how our system works. What are your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think looking at all the clinical evidence that we've been hearing all week, she's seriously mentally ill. She belongs in a place that's focused on support for mentally ill people and treatment. Now, prisons do have units or wards or whatever they call it, for people who have disabilities, whether they be severe psychiatric disabilities, health disabilities. They're not typically put in the general population, and I think that would not happen for her just because she's paralyzed. But it's not going to be the same level of care and the intensity of care that she's getting at Tewksbury, where she's at right now. And certainly from all the evidence, everything we've heard this week, she's severely mentally ill. And the treatment that she would get at Tewksbury is certainly ethically the right thing to do for her.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a real ethical conundrum. I mean, to me, that this is how it, but it is, I mean, it is how it works, Robin.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you, Tony. And what an insightful question. I'm not validating you for the sake of it. I mean, this is probably, I think, one of the harder, there's so many hard things to this, but this is one of the bigger ones for me as well, because as a jury, their job is not to think in terms of sentencing.
Yeah.
Yet their decision is going to impact the sentencing to this point. And so this is an interesting gap I'm seeing here, because to everyone's point, there's, like Siobhan said, there's not one mental health professional that's testified for either side that says she's well. And she's, and which is an interesting observation. She has been in a facility for mental health since she committed this horrendous act. Yeah. And yet, based on 16 people, 16 or 18? I'm sorry.
18.
18. Someone else is going to make the decision who's not a clinician on where she spends the rest of her life. Or if she's found not responsible by reason of insanity or whatever, it'll be an undetermined amount, but definitely for the long foreseeable future. So that's a very, very interesting ethical question.
It seems like an odd place for the road to split and for who's making that decision, where it's not a medical professional making a medical decision for someone, but based on a judicial ruling. But I mean, it is what it is. Let's talk about one more thing, Tony.
So here's a bit of hope I have in this one. Again, I use that word hope in places and maybe sometimes where you shouldn't. I like the judge in this. You know, and so he's going to be one that's in charge of sentencing. So let's, no matter what happens in the outcome, I'd be really fascinated to see what happens next. And also, we know Reddington's made enough enough smoke and fires throughout this thing that there's going to be a large number of appeals on whatever the outcome is, if it's not
Available
to them.
Yeah, it's... I agree with all of that. If she were to be found guilty, it's just, this is not a patient or a defendant here that you know, necessarily has the,
should be in Gen Pop.
Yeah, that I think has the gusto to survive years and years of appeals or anything like that. I mean, I think she's fragile as hell.
Good point too.
Let's talk about what it looks like in a facility. Siobhan, you had said that, you know, it's probably not going to be Gen Pop. This is a woman who can't get from her bed to her wheelchair without two people lifting her. Mm-hmm. In a hospital, being that helpless is safe. In a prison, she'd be defenseless in a building full of women who, you know, may despise what she did, may not have the most understanding for what happened. What sort of, I mean, granted, even if it is, best case scenario here, she's not in Gen Pop, she's in a segmented area. What does that actually look like behind bars? What kind of dangers does she face? What's the reality of what this would be if she goes behind bars?
Yeah, I don't know that, I would doubt that a prison is going to have her with people monitoring her in the same room and being with her for support 24/7, which is what she's had. And how much time is she going to be alone? We know that urge to unalive herself is still very, very strong, which is one reason that they're watching her so closely. And I'm guessing that she's getting some supportive care from those people watching her. And so that would be, I think, absent in prison to that degree. And so her odds of survival would probably go down because there are going to be more opportunities for self-harm.
And not just that, but general population harm. Even if she's segregated to some, I tried as well to do some research on where she might wind up if she's convicted. And the outlook is not good, you know, because she's going to be vulnerable because of being paralyzed and also because of the self-harm issues that she's continually dealing with, especially, I mean, everything's kerosene on that fire for her right now at this point. And then you actually have the act of what she did herself with the filicide, which actually makes her another target as well. Yeah. Because as divided as we are here on the outside about how we feel about her on the mental health side versus the other population side, the same thing's going to exist in there as well, except they have more vitriol towards it potentially.
Quite often when it comes to S-Watch or ideations and such, it's not that, you know, in a jail setting in Massachusetts, that individual is going to be put into, you know, very likely a lockdown type setting, a stripped down cell with not the means to do that. I mean, as much as they can reduce that, if you will, the chances of it. But I mean, when you're talking about, I mean, the goal is clearly not to help the person anymore. It's more so to contain the madness, if you will. It seems insanely inhumane. But again, this does happen every day to inmates that are suffering from mental health problems. But it is how we do it. We'll lock them away in a place where they can't necessarily hurt themselves. Does it ever really help anything, removing the objects or means to which someone could hurt themselves with and putting them into a quiet room where nobody else is around in a prison? Or does that tend to make things even worse for someone who's already on the precipice of psychosis?
Yeah. Isolation is very hard on people psychologically. And we know that they often deteriorate if they're isolated. So where she is now, I'm guessing that she has groups, she has activities, you know, productive activities, things that she can do and be involved in. She would have regular therapy. And so that's probably not going to be available to her. And so for her to survive psychologically in prison is just going to be a lot more challenging.
Yeah, what happens to that, Siobhan? You know, because everyone's right on this one about most likely being in isolation because of the self-harm issue she's dealing with. And so we don't have to even take a look at or focus on the hypothesis of her psychotic break. Just look at what all the clinicians agreed upon, that high SI ideation plus action, bipolar, either one or two, which I know mm-hmm. you're a much bigger expert on mm-hmm. that. I mean, all these mental health issues she's dealing with, what's that? Because I know, look, right now, observing her, looking at her, and even hearing some reports, she sounds stable-ish from what mm-hmm. we've seen. If you mm-hmm. put her in that kind of isolation, we know it's not good psychologically. Mm-hmm. What happens to her brain next? What do you think starts escalating from there?
She certainly could develop more symptoms. And depression has been a significant problem, anxiety a significant problem, and that could certainly increase in a prison system.
What do you say, Siobhan, to people? There's plenty watching right now that are going and saying, she doesn't deserve group activities. She doesn't deserve anything that is beyond the basics. She killed her three children, the babies. What do you say to that? For folks who really have zero empathy, zero sympathy, mm-hmm. zero care whatsoever for where she ends up, whether that be in a prison setting or a tank of sharks.
Yeah, we're seeing, as we've talked about, and I know you've been talking about it, the incredible lack of compassion. And I'd say a lot of it is sadistic, the things people are writing. And this urge to see her as a monster and to see her as miserable as she can possibly be. A lot of people want her eliminated, you know. Mm-hmm. It's troubling. I think there are a lot of troubling things about this case. It's a very painful case to listen to the testimony. But people are just acting out in rage about what they see, what they want to see happen to Lindsay. And that, I think, for me, it's been shocking and rather depressing and sad to see the lack of awareness and this vicious, vituperative desire to see her tormented. And mm-hmm. it's unfortunate.
It's shocking, like you said, to watch people want to treat her and regard her like we're regarding Koberger.
Yes.
And it's like they're clumping those two people together, but they're apples and oranges different about what was going on inside that brain. And I think that's people's quick knee-jerk reaction, and then they double down on it because they don't want to contradict anything they say to or believe from the very beginning and onset. It's because of their lack of understanding, but it's pretty profoundly different.
And they won't listen to me. I know you've heard me say this probably 24 times, but I'll keep saying it in case new people are listening. And I just want to reinforce, a psychopath is not psychotic.
Right. Yeah.
A psychotic person is not a psychopath. And it just seems like, no matter how many times I say it, people that are invested in rage and punishment, they don't want to hear it, you know? I mean, they just don't want to hear the basic facts.
Is it because those folks are too close to actually being one or the other? and well, it's just flying too close to the sun, and it's just like, nope, can't accept that.
That would be a really interesting study. I think sometimes yeah. they're just people who, as we say, don't think in a sophisticated manner. They don't have an open mind. They can be addicted to rage, and they get this amped up. You know, people that are watching it for hours and hours and hours and are only in their yeah. bubble where everybody's saying the same thing. This just becomes their reality, and it's not reality. And, yeah. you know, they don't want to be confused by the facts.
It's an interesting way to watch it, too, because as you're saying, watch it for hours and hours and hours. I'm like, uh-oh, I'm watching this for hours and hours and hours. But here's an interesting take on it. Like we were talking about this right before the show, in the last couple of days, especially with Dr. Resnick, and we agreed on this as well, for the prosecution, I'm watching for hours and hours and hours, and most times what we're seeing for these other people are like, see, I told you, because they're cherry picking their own confirmation yeah. bias to prove yeah. their preconceived notions to fill in those gaps. Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm listening to Dr. Resnick, and I go, ooh, mm-hmm. that's an interesting ad I hadn't mm-hmm. thought of. You mm-hmm. know, so there's a different way in which to interrogate that information and critically think through the things you're listening to. As I said yesterday, the greatest thing, I think, for people like us that try to critically think these things and also remain humble, the fact that I can be very wrong sometimes, and oftentimes sometimes, is when we change our minds. You know, is being open to the fact that, wow, my mind can be changed on this, or at least waver, wobble, explore it more deeply. Because again, Resnick, I thought, and I know we'll get into it, just did a really good job of expanding things a little bit more and encapsulating, like you said, what all the clinicians are saying and can agree upon, even though each of them has their own specialty differences and experiences.
Mm-hmm. You know, an option we don't have here in the United States, and some countries do, is the choice to humanely self-exit the planet. And this is something that really hasn't been brought up in this case at all. She's talked about it several times. She doesn't want to be here. The only reason she's still here is because a lot of people that are not her have made sure that she kept herself alive and removed the possibilities of herself exiting. Mm-hmm. Is this uniquely an American problem that we have I guess being open to this possibility, where other places do this humanely, and it's not always just when someone is severely critically ill, if you will, you know, with cancer or something of that nature. Lindsey Clan, and it's a very, you know, touchy subject for a lot of folks, but at the same point, in a case like this, where this has happened, she went through this hell, she's out of the psychosis now, and she's seen what the hell happened. There's no therapy, there's nothing that's going to like make me a whole human being. Yeah. There's nothing that I'm going to be, oh, let me get on with my day and find something better to do that's going to be worthwhile. Honest to God, in a case like this, is that something that should really be on the table for more people? Do you want to go through this? This is a circus show. And it's mainly for everybody out here. It's not for you. We're not teaching you a lesson. We're not putting you away so you learn how wrong of what you did was bad. This is someone, if we accept that she was mentally ill, she was in a state of psychosis, and she clearly doesn't want to be here anymore. What are we doing this for other than for ourselves?
It's a tough question. I have probably my own biases. I think if people are terminally ill with cancer, they're suffering, they've gone through treatment, there's not going to be a saving of them, and they're looking at a very long, lingering death. I fully 100% support it. I had a friend with ALS who, when it progressed to the point that she could not swallow and she could not speak, she made the decision, you know, for a medical assistance in dying.
Yeah.
100%, I get that. But when we get into mental health issues, I'm a little more cautious because, as I always say, I like to hold hope.
Sure.
Even in these dark cases, and I have hope that even particularly if she goes to Tewksbury or another psychiatric facility, that maybe over time she could regain a quality of life that made it worth living. You know, maybe she would have something to say to the world that would help people understand this. So that's just my bias.
Sure. No, it's a fair argument. And I agree. But whose choice is that to make, I guess? Is that, it's a hope for those of us on the outside that maybe she could add something to such trite words, conversation, you know, that people have in our understanding of this from a perspective that only she can deliver, which could be very powerful. But again, you're asking her to continue to live when maybe she doesn't want to.
Yeah.
I totally understand where you're coming from, especially on mental health. This is one, though, where it's like, I can totally understand why you want out. Why essentially the rest of her existence on this planet is worse than living with a terminal illness, I would say, almost.
Yeah. I would say, though, at the same time, if she's found not competent to be able to be accountable for the action she took, being able to be competent enough mentally to make that choice as well is something I would say is an interesting challenge.
Medicated in her right mind?
But at the same
time, someone who's making the right amount. That's someone who's got their wits about them. That's making an educated choice. Just because someone chooses they want to do that doesn't mean that they're not, you know, in a mental state that, of competence.
So I did look it up, though, since we brought it up. You know what I do. No country has a recognized legal pathway that lets someone in cases like this self-execute or assisted euthanasia. The ones that do allow assisted euthanasia under very tight restrictions for, like we're talking about, medical reasons is like Netherlands, Belgium, Canada, Spain, and a few others. But it's under strict rules, very tight guidelines. But, but people in this type of situation are not eligible for those assists in any of those countries as well. So so this does not exist since we brought up the hypothesis, which is
maybe it should.
Well, it's an interesting hypothesis or thought experiment, I should say. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that before. It's interesting to think about.
I know. I mean,
it's tragic as well.
It's horrible. It's horribly tragic. And I'm not saying it is like anything light about it, but it's like, well, I don't know. Some cases.
And if you think about it too, would it really serve the people that want to see her tortured? Because they wouldn't want her to be able to choose it. They'd want her to suffer through it. So I don't know if it would silence the sadistic ones out there anyway. Or again, but it would only be to bring her peace. But there's so many aspects of this that I've never felt underqualified to speak on so many things except this case in such a long time on so many different areas. That's why I'm really leaning in hard on the medical professionals on this one because there's like every day I'm learning a different little nuance, a different little difference. And that's why, thank God, we have Siobhan with us today every Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of emotions here. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.